All right, welcome to the Pelicans Podcast Network. Another edition of Between Bites with Nina Compton and Larry Miller. Nina?
No, you.
Yes, if we just get our voices out of the way, because you're about to be blown away. We're joined today by the legendary Joel Myers. Joel, welcome.
Thank you for having me, both of you, because I appreciate what you guys do. I mean, and you come and you put up with us. You come to the games, and we appreciate that.
We love going to the games.
And if we don't go to the games, or if Pelicans are out of town, we have you in our living room telling us what's happening.
Yeah, and I'm fortunate. I get to work with Antonio Daniels and Jen Hill, and we've been together a long time. And, in fact, it's 11 years for me with Jen. Antonio, the last 4 years, and he's just a pick-me-up. He's passionate.
It's amazing the way you guys – it sounds like you grew up together, just chatting in the – in your bedrooms falling asleep. How did you get into broadcasting?
Been on forever. And I was on the air when I was at the University of Missouri. In fact, I ran out of radio stations there. I did, because, you know, you're on the campus station, then somebody hears you and you get hired away. You go to K-Tiger, K-T-G-R, in the old Tiger Hotel.
Listen to that.
And there are 2.5-minute songs, you know, back then.
Right.
And if you needed the water closet, you were in trouble. So, and then off to KFMZ. And I ran out of stations. So it was a good start. That was a great start.
Now, you grew up in St. Louis.
Yes.
What is it? Why is that the mecca of sports broadcasting? I mean, you who did you listen to growing up?
Well, I was spoiled. Yeah. Because we had Harry Carey and Jack Buck doing the Cardinals. Jerry Gross was our basketball announcer on the Hawks before Skip Carey took over, right before they left, and eventually Skip went with the ball club to Atlanta.
I didn't know that's how Skip got to Atlanta.
Yes.
I grew up with Skip.
Yeah, Skip was the Hawks. And I'd say a couple of years before, maybe 65, 66, because the Hawks were gone by 68, 69 season and moved to Atlanta. So their last season in St. Louis was 67, 68. So I listened to the old clock radio. There were monsters that you had in your bedroom.
Yeah.
And that's the way I fell asleep at night, listening to basketball. And we also had really good football announcers doing the Cardinals, the Big Red, as we called them in those days. But St. Louis, you also had KMOX. And that was my last station there, which was a blowtorch. It was one of the clear channels, 50,000 watts. And at the end of the day, when everybody, they had to lower after sunset, the smaller stations, and then the big booming stations like KMOX. They went all over the country.
So in St. Louis, what is, if I have to go tomorrow, what's the one thing I must eat?
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, St. Louis pizza is made with a cheese we don't know where it emanates from. I like to say it's like good wine. It's a blend.
Right. You know?
But Provel cheese, and it's paper thin, very crispy. If you know New Haven, Connecticut, mm-hmm. like Sally's and Frank Pepe's, cut in squares, in old beat-up square pans, and it's exceptional. And you also want to go on the Hill. The Hill District is the Italian district of St. Louis, which is where Yogi Berra, Joe Garagiola grew up, and those little houses that they grew up in are the same.
Oh, wow.
Identical. They weren't bulldozed like a lot of other places.
Right.
St. Louis is very, very similar to New Orleans. They don't bulldoze, they restore.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love that.
Now, I can imagine that not just St. Louis, but through your career, now that you travel a lot, how do you pick a restaurant when you're traveling? How often is it, I've got to go back to this restaurant that I've loved for all these years, or let me try this new one?
Well, first of all, local knowledge is everything. It's like when I came to New Orleans, I had a list people gave me that you have to try. And you find out by the locals and the other broadcasters, where should I go next time I'm here? So if it's the Western Conference, we're there twice a year. Eastern Conference only once. So, like, we're going to New York coming up right after All-Star, and Toronto, which world-class city, international, beautiful. I have my – and Alex McKechnie, who's their head of sports medicine, has already texted me. We've got a table. And then I already booked a table at Il Molino in New York, the original.
Oh, how fun.
Oh, God. And then Emmett Cohn is playing that night. I collect music, and he's a prodigy. Early 30s, piano jazz. There's options that night, though. It's really tough. There's like two or three great, besides Emmett, playing in New York that night, second sets. So dinner at 8, 8:30, 10:30, you're at a jazz club. It's pretty. That's strong.
Like a lovely evening.
Yeah, yeah. It's, and we're lucky like that on Frenchman Street.
Right.
Yeah.
You have everything planned out. I love that.
Yeah.
So, where are some of your favorites when you're not traveling for work? Where do you like to go? Like, what are your favorite food cities besides New Orleans?
Well, San Francisco. I love San Francisco. Live there, and that was a long time ago. Our first son was born there. So only great thoughts, great memories. And San Francisco has evolved as well as a very good food city. And there's a Greek restaurant. I think it's Kikiro. Okay. And I got turned on to that, and it's amazing. Great Mediterranean. I've gone to an Alon Chai here.
Yeah.
I've now sought out and searched for Mediterranean.
I never thought
that I'd go there. I used to be chop houses,
right,
or pasta houses, and now I'm looking for a Mediterranean.
Yeah.
We all evolve and grow, don't we?
Yes, indeed.
Give me a 2-pound porterhouse. No, not anymore.
Yeah.
We were eating off of it for 3 days. So through your career, you've done color commentary and play-by-play. You can only do one for the rest of your life. Which one are you picking?
Well, basketball is my love. And I love what I do here. I love the game. And I owe it. It's kind of funny because I'm having dinner with him and his wife tonight. And that's Bob Pettit, Hall of Famer, yep. Top 50, top 75. Having dinner with Bob and Alma tonight. And I fell in love with the game. My brother, 8 years older than myself, would take me to all the Hawks games at Kiel Auditorium. And I was amazed watching them play. And Bob retired when I was really young. He retired after 11 seasons in 1965. But because of Bob and the guys he played with, like Lenny Wilkins, and I can go down the list, Paul Silas, Bill Bridges, guys like that, I just fell in love with it. It was, and I played as a kid. I was never any good, but I loved the game.
Right.
So I owe a great deal to Bob just for the amazement of, you know, when you're a kid, that's what I love at our arena. It's a lot of kids in the building,
yeah,
and our director shoots them. When we're taking breaks, he's not shooting adults screaming. It's the kids trying to get on the big screen.
Right, yeah.
And it's sweet. And that's why we didn't have a big screen. But I went to the game, and I was amazed by these gifted guys.
Well, it's fun, too, that our team now acts like a bunch of excited kids when everything's going well.
Right. They care about each other.
And the post-game interviews that they're, you know, they'll try and be, well, I just played the game, and, you know, we went out to play defense, and all of a sudden, Jose's jumping up, throwing a towel on top of your
and
head.
The water.
Yeah, and the water.
But that's the key is the chemistry we have developed now. And I tell people all the time, this is not about this season. That's why David Griffin has done such a good job. He's brought a different culture, a different environment completely. So David's got Trajan, Swin, and Bryson, and I should mention their last name, but everybody knows Trajan Langdon,
yeah.
Swin Cash, Bryson Graham. And so David's put together and assembled a really good front office. And in any, I don't care what your business is, you guys are real successes, you need a flow chart. You need people that are responsible and ready. And
yes,
they're really on top of it.
We
so
had
we have a good thing
about
going.
That. with everybody. It's amazing, too, how fortunately some of these products of Duke University turned out, because you just couldn't stand these guys when they were at Duke.
Glad you said it.
Man, but now they're here. I love
right,
them. Amazing
right.
job. Great job.
You know,
or when they quit playing. I'm happy when they quit playing and move into the front office.
Yeah, well, we had Trajan, right?
Yeah.
Because I just had a picture with Taken, and Allah asked, he said, come get in this picture with us. And it was Trajan and Allah Abdelnaby, who does the color for the Philadelphia 76ers for
that.
A number of years. So
okay.
I tweeted it out. But I had spent time with Mike Krzyzewski for USA Basketball way back when, and we sat in a conference room in Vegas doing interviews with each individual player for down the road. We had to do so. We had to wait 15, 20 minutes between each guy coming down from his room. And then I realized, now I know why Duke does so well, because this is a quality guy.
Yeah.
This is a really good person. Besides X's and O's, you can understand why when he meets with families and meets with the players,
they want to go play with him.
He's a good person.
Yeah.
Right. So after being around Coach K, and a couple of times we did this for USA Basketball, I understood it completely.
That's neat. Now, I'm guessing that your career progression did not go from radio directly to the NBA. So there may have been some starting job. We start off washing dishes or working in prep, or we become a busboy and a server.
Or frying wings.
Or frying wings.
I love it.
What were some of those early jobs that you just roll your eyes at now that thank God I had them there and they've gotten me to here?
Well, I worked at Target. I worked at McDonald's. I worked at a delicatessen chopping onions in the back. And I wasn't crying, but it was pouring out. And I had a lot of jobs. My parents wanted me to work. And there was a certain discipline that went along with it in taking on all kinds of jobs. Every summer, I worked at, when the first summer they ever opened outside of St. Louis, Six Flags over Mid-America. And I worked the brakes on the log flume.
That's awesome.
It was big time.
That's a stressful job, isn't it?
It was all these people coming there drenched by the time they got to me.
That's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, they were just drenched. But it was St. Louis summer, so I don't think they minded.
Right.
But I had a lot of jobs, like you guys.
What was your favorite and what was your least favorite job you've ever had?
Well, it's the people you work with. I think even in the most mundane roles that you might be in when you're a 16-year-old and you're driving. And so I always really got along with the people I worked with. And we'd party afterwards. And whether it was McDonald's or Six Flags, we all got together afterwards.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoyed the company of the people that I worked with. And that was the key to it. It's kind of like that has never changed. And I'm fortunate because that's the way it is right now. AD and I have a great time together. And a lot of people don't realize I called his games with the Spurs. I was doing the Spurs 25 years ago. And so I knew AD for a long time. And he's just a good person. So, and always got along. And always knew. And he and Tim Duncan were best friends. They're still very, very close. So if you couldn't find AD, you knew where he was. He was with Tim.
Right.
That's yeah. Funny. So it was always about the people you work with. That's the fun. And you remember them more than the job you did.
That's right.
The relationships you had with those
That's
people.
Right.
Who do you never want to work with again? I'm just kidding, Joe. We're not going to go there.
Let's go there.
All right. I'm all for it. What were your parents' reaction as you started off? And again, this kind of goes back to that us working in restaurants before you were able to know how to run them and own them. What were your parents' reaction to you saying, I'm going out west to do this?
Well, they didn't believe it at first. And my dad, World War II guy, remember, World War II guys, they were just tough workers. Mm-hmm. They put in time, they put in the hours, and he had his own business, and he built it up. So I was always at his warehouse. I was working every weekend of my life at his warehouse. He would tell me, when I told him what I wanted to do, which was play-by-play from the very beginning, he said, you know how competitive that is. Come on, get serious. So I had a brother who was going to dental school, and I was supposed to go to law school. They were deeply, deeply disappointed, to say the least. And then when I told them, you know, I was moving out west, and I got a 3-year contract to move out west, my dad still didn't believe me. And I told him it was Gene Autry's Golden West Company. And he said, really? We were at dinner one night on the hill in St. Louis with my wife-to-be. And actually, we were married by then because we left right after we got married.
Wow.
And moved to San Francisco. But there was disbelief, like, you know what you're in for? And you know what I always talk whenever I talk to youngsters? You're allowed to dream. You're allowed to have goals. So go for it.
Yeah.
Why not?
That is true, and you want to dream. But do you ever think about, look where I am now with this career, this many years in the NBA, and how many people, everybody talks about the guy who was a great high school basketball player, went to college, maybe he wasn't so great. He realized how many more great players got compressed at each level going up. And there's you up there for this many years in the booth. Do you, or at the scores table, do you ever think about that sometimes and think back, wow, that either I crushed it? Is there a secret to the success there?
You never think about crushing anything. You really don't. And because it can be taken away that quickly. So I don't think about it as much as I think about how fortunate I am, because there's only 30 teams.
Right.
There's only 30 guys. I actually think about the people that helped me along the way, that actually gave me great advice or were brutally blunt and honest. And I remember that. And I keep up with those people. The guy that hired me in San Francisco, and unfortunately we just lost him in the last 6 months. And he was young, 70s. And he hired me in San Francisco. He changed my life. So because he took a box out from under his desk when he brought me in, we were in the Fairmont Hotel, our studios.
Okay.
It was awful on Nob Hill. And he pulled out a box with like 200-300 cassettes. In those days, it was cassettes. And he goes, here, that's how many people wanted your gig. And I gave it to you to put pressure on me. Let me, because I was a sports director at KSFO. And I kept up with him. And any trip to Portland, he was the first guy I would reach out to. Can we get together?
Right.
So you always remember, and especially with the people that were really good to you with advice, like Greg Popovich, anybody that you worked with, like Pop was brutally blunt, was good. I was, you know, I was a kid who thought, you don't think.
Right.
You know, you're gung-ho, and you need those to kind of set you straight.
Were you able to laugh when he was extremely blunt
later on?
How long did it take before you could laugh?
I saw him at firsthand remind people, you know, are we on point here? Because he's an Air Force grad.
Right.
Russian history. Like when Pop recruited Rasha Nesterovich to join the Spurs, he was at his door over in the Eastern European country and he spoke his language.
Wow.
Right. So that's pretty impressive and intense. And when he would say something, when I left, I'd always knock on his door. He'd have his little tensor lamp on and he'd be going over his plays, wrap up an hour before tip, hour and a half. But I always knock on the door to say, how are you? How's Aaron? How are the kids? You just don't forget those people.
Yeah.
They are really, really, they're an influence on you.
Did you ever have a moment where you thought you were not going to make it? Did you have like a moment of doubt? I think we all have those moments, but was there something that really stuck out?
Disappointment, but not doubt. Mm-hmm. I think there's a difference. And actually, it serves as motivation that there's a challenge.
Yes.
And you guys, because you're in an ultra-competitive environment where, I mean, come on. How many good restaurants do we have in New Orleans? And you guys have two exceptional restaurants.
Thank you.
So it motivates you. It challenges you. And then you say to yourself, I'm just as good as that SOB. Right. So I'm not going to stop. It's one person's opinion. We're all in a very subjective, you know, workplace.
Sure.
Everybody's got an opinion, like I won't say what,
yeah.
But it is challenging. That's what it is. That's if you want to stay and compete, challenge yourself. That's all.
What's it like now, Nina? You are too young to remember Chick Hearn, but he's a legendary Hall of Fame announcer for the Lakers. And a couple years after he retires, you're sitting in his chair. How does that feel? Is that pressure in your head? Or you just shake it off and say, here I am, I got hired for the job, I'm doing it.
Well, first of all, he was really good to me because he was a Southern Illinois guy.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, he was Southern Illinois. And so he was real close to St. Louis, maybe two and a half hours out of St. Louis. And he was a tall guy. So when I was doing the Spurs, he'd always put his arm around me, we'd take a walk. Because he was about 6'4", 6'5", I'd say. And we'd walk and we'd talk. And he asked me, how's it going, kid? You know, he wanted to know. So he couldn't have been kinder. But I was doing the Spurs at the time, and I was in heaven. I was with Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford. So I was really content. I would have been the Spurs guy forever. And the Lakers, because I was under contract, called the Spurs. Otherwise, it would have been tampering.
Huh.
Right. And my one son was going into his first year of college, and my other son was going into his first year of high school, ninth grade. So that was the tug. It was more personal than professional because I was really, really content and happy. I was working with Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford, and I just won a title in 03. And so you're leaving a team, and I jumped on the bus for everything, for practice, for shoot-arounds. You know, I was proverbial pig in you know what. And so I didn't want to go, but I wanted to be with my family, and they were in L.A. So it was a tough commute. I kept a place, an apartment in San Antonio. And so I didn't think about it really. Back to your original premise, I didn't think about it. Nobody replaces somebody that good, an iconic figure that, I mean, some of it, the terminology that he put into play during the broadcast and then later the simulcast, the telecast, they're around today.
Yep.
And they'll be around forever. So he was a pioneer.
Speaking of inventing phrases, can you think of any that come across that somebody else came up with that, say, I don't even know, what it is, but somebody invented the phrase crossover. Can you remember certain times where words popped out that are now common usage that we didn't use, or did it take, you know, I guess Kuzi or Havlicek there, they probably got somebody fired up and they described their dribbling or passing in a way that we still use today just as common language. Is
right.
Anything there?
Well, I think we've become more economical because we were all really, because of radio before television, and we were all, I grew up in radio, and I moved over to TV, and it was for economic reasons more than anything else because I was happy in radio, but we became more economical. So radio was fun because you could get away with everything and anything. You could, and nobody was watching. If you wanted to embellish it, you could have a great time with it, and you could make that play that was fairly mundane, you could make it spectacular.
Right.
But you always wanted to beat the crowd. That was the key to a rat-a-tat-tat. So you point A to B to C to D and the finish, and boom, you shut up while the crowd explodes. But you had to be a good I learned that was the key on radio, was cadence, you know, rhythm and cadence. So, no, I mean, I like the way Marv would say yes.
That was the one that popped in my head.
I've always said got it. Then that was always something I always used because, I like the way we've all pulled back a little. And if anything, I have to try to maintain that because we get into it and let the picture tell the story more. And we have so much fun, you know, with AD and I going back and forth that let it breathe occasionally. Right.
Neat. Well, speaking of, I mean, like using your voice as not even daggers, like a samurai sword. That's all, folks. The sign-off from the Lakers game.
That was not premeditated.
That's amazing. And when you said that's all, folks.
Right.
Now, we'll back up a little bit.
And I like AD, the other Anthony Davis, the other AD. But I really, that was not. It was just the amount. Like the other night when.
But let's tell him that on his last day
he wore
in
the
New
t-shirt,
Orleans, he wore
which
a
I thought
t-shirt
was,
and said, that's all, folks.
You know, Mrs. Benson. Gail has been unbelievable
like
to everybody, and especially to Anthony Davis and his entire family. That's not the way you depart.
Right.
Right.
That's, you know, it's like, oh, this agent, he's my new bestest buddy. Well, wait a minute. What about all these people that have been in your corner since you got here?
Right.
Sacrifice. Right. I mean, I could go into stories where I'm with our head of media and there's a phone call and it's a member of his family asking for something and it's done right away. So remember how good it was and how good they treated you and your family. So, it wasn't premeditated. In fact, it was emotional. The other night.
The game after we win,
The
shot goes to AD and you hear that's
well, all. Well, because it was an emotional moment.
Sure.
And if it's not spontaneous, then it's kind of, to me, it's just premeditated. It's fabricated. It's not as natural.
Genuine, yeah.
Right. So I didn't even think about it. The other night, Trey hit that against the Lakers. Trey hit the second three, and it was like 30 feet away, and I just stood up. That's the first time in my 11 years here that I have left my seat. But it was an emotional moment for us. We had to get that win. It was a weekend that we had to succeed, and we did.
And we did.
We had a great weekend, great week. We're going to keep it going. The challenges of being for 11 years with the team, and you're able to say we and us, and you're able to be so excited that you stand up for the first time calling a game. In the off season, you go and let's just say it's it's another sport even, that if you're calling a football game, is it easier to broadcast that game as a neutral observer?
Yes, absolutely.
Is it?
Because I don't live with them.
Right.
See, I live with these guys. I get on the bus with these guys. I eat post and pregame meals with these guys. David has made it so that AD and I and Jen were at the team dinners.
That's nice.
You were in Beverly Hills, right down the street at an Italian restaurant, or Salt Lake City the other night at Walter's, the Italian restaurant. We're with them. And that's the key, is that, you know, they know how much we care. If you care, they're going to feel it. If it's authentic, and we have that now, it is really authentic, what we have going in the locker room. These guys really care. That's why I'm glad we didn't make any big deals at the trade deadline. See, we lost a really good person But it was, you know, Devontae and a great teammate. I told Devontae how I felt. He's an incredible teammate because he hadn't been getting as many minutes, but he was there to support his team, yep. And everybody loves him. Great guy. So we want only the best for him. And he was rewarded. Griff gave him a great contract to come here. But that's why I'm happy that we're waiting to see. Because, as I said, it's not about this year. We're building the right way. We're not trying to steal somebody else's talent like a major market is doing right now.
Right.
And we know who we're talking about.
Who's been a player that, just through your whole career, when you were with a single team, that you lost or that was traded? Not you didn't lose them, but they were traded or cut, and you're like, damn, I really missed that guy.
Drew.
Yeah.
I love Drew. My son once stayed with him in high school.
Oh.
And I've watched Drew and Aaron and Justin grow up to young men, dads, great people, great family. So it's an easy. And I just saw Drew in Milwaukee and a big hug. And then I saw last game with Aaron and Justin. And Justin got dealt today. And it's a tough business. It really is. You're compensated accordingly.
Yeah.
But it's a tough business because your family's involved. It's
yes.
not just about you. So, but Drew Holiday, that whole family. And it's funny because at Campbell Hall in North Hollywood, Studio City actually, they'd go to timeout and Aaron would run onto the floor, who was probably 10 years old at the time, during every timeout to get as many shots up as possible.
Yeah.
And then he'd run off the floor right as they were ready to put it back into play. And these were good high school games.
Yeah.
But, and you could tell he was going to be a nice player. He was for 3 years at UCLA and now in the NBA. So, the Holiday family stands out. And Drew especially and his wife and the kids.
Yeah,
Drew's just
incredible. To eat and he yeah. is
the best.
It's just that smile will
yes,
the best.
A big
warm
smile
the room.
And it's,
yeah, great family.
You know, he eats, he's like, just feed me.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
and it's
a wonderful
just
guy.
A great energy.
And he hasn't changed. That's
good.
The one
yeah,
thing.
That's the...
He hasn't changed at all. He's just a wonderful, it's a good family. His yes. mom and dad were tough. His mom was the athletic director at the school.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah, and a teacher. And Sean and Toya, yeah, I mean, they were disciplinarians.
Right.
And the boys, you see what happened. And their daughter, who played basketball as well and was really talented.
How often or how much do you follow the college game?
Very little.
Okay.
My night's off, like last night, I think there were 10 or 12 games. I saw some of everyone. So, and I made a St. Louis pizza. I had it shipped in on dry ice. You know, goldbelly.com.
Yeah.
You guys know the.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so that has opened up a lot to a lot of restaurants and places. So I get my paper-thin pizza. I get six at a time. They're delivered on dry ice. And
awesome.
I am in
special
heaven.
Special occasions only.
Right. And I love because, you know, it's only a seven-month season, mm-hmm. basically.
Only.
You know, because we're taken away. We could go deeper, and hopefully, knock on wood, we will. Yeah.
Right.
But we're basically October 1 to May 1. And then the network takes over.
Yeah.
If we're lucky enough to get to the second round. So, it's my life now for 7 months.
You've been picked up on those with TNT, I
yes,
guess, for
yes.
playoffs. How is that going and working with a new partner?
It's easy because they put as much time in as you do because they want to succeed. Whether it's – I've done so many summer league games with all these guys, from Chris Webber when he started. I did Bill Walton. By the way, Bill Walton was – I did his first television with him. When we did the clips together back in the early 90s.
Can you imagine what he was saying right. back then?
Well, you know, Bill
or was
had,
he nervous? Was
he had a stuttering himself? Problem.
Ah.
He left law school at Stanford. He's a bright guy. Really bright guy.
Stanford.
Yeah. And
no
so Bill, but he would gather, like a big man would gather on the block to make his pivot, his drop step. Bill would gather and then he'd fly. He was ready and poised. So, and it's turned out he's sharp. He's fun. And he's a friend for life, so I'm not objective. But there are all these guys like Vince Carter I've worked with recently and all these other people that I've done games with. They care. Everybody comes in with the same kind of like MO.
Right.
We're all in it together to have a great game, a great telecast. Like you guys, you want to present a great meal. What was the name of the movie Stanley Tucci was in?
Oh, Big Night.
Big Night.
How great was
yes.
that?
Yeah.
You know,
I love him. He is.
I love it too.
That
and
was,
what about Tuscany?
Yes.
How great is that
yeah,
show?
It's.
You got to meet him.
I did. I got to meet him this past October.
How was it?
Delightful.
Yeah.
So smooth.
I have a million questions for you guys. I really do.
All right. Well,
because I don't eat to live. I live to eat.
Yes.
So how did you guys really start? Were you in the back of the kitchen and stage and next stage?
I started cooking. I mean, the kitchen is the most active place in anybody's home, or most people's homes. So when I'd wake up, somebody'd be in the kitchen, you know, from any point during the day. And I always loved what food did to me. It made me very happy. It brought people together. So I told my mom one day, I'm like, I think I want to be a professional chef. And she's like, why would you want to do that? It's so stressful. And she says, well, if you're going to do that and be serious, you need to work. So I worked at a hotel. I did all the stations, and I did it for 2 years, and I fell in love. And it was just always about, again, challenging myself and trying to be the best, surround myself with the best. So,
and so the dream was always to have your own place. Yep. After 2 years at a hotel, where did you go?
I went to Jamaica. Then I went to culinary school in New York. I worked at Restaurant Danielle in Manhattan, and then New York was great, but too cold for me. So I moved to Miami, nice and tropical, and met Larry. And then, I was starting to travel a lot. And I said, I'm like, I don't think Miami's for us. I think I want to go somewhere else. And we had gotten a lot of opportunities and different restaurants in different states. And we got a phone call to do New Orleans, and I said, you're joking, right? And he said, no. And we came in into the restaurant that he's sitting in right now. There was mud floors, wires were hanging down on them.
No ceiling, yes. Three brick walls and mud.
This is right. I told you guys when I walked in, I said, I've been here for dinner, and it's so beautiful at night. The lighting, the setup. So, yeah, I don't know if you did it individually. You designed it yourself?
We had a team from New York that did it, but, you know, we wanted to keep it. New Orleans, what I love about it, they restore everything. They preserve everything.
Right.
You know, living in Miami, everything is very new, white, shiny, gold, very, a little gaudy, it's a lot, it's very new. And for us, this space felt very lived in, it felt very warm. And I want people to come here 3-4 times a week and hang out, not to feel like it's a special occasion.
Right.
I want people to feel comfortable when they come here.
Yeah, it is a warm atmosphere. Good. It's absolutely a warm atmosphere, real comfortable atmosphere. So were you in a hotel, Larry?
I started off in restaurant. I made bad grades one year when Georgia Tech was making a run at the national championship. And back then there was no
Bobby Crimmins.
No email. I'm sorry, this was football, but yeah, Bobby was there. We had a good time back then. We had Lethal Weapon 3 on the basketball court and made a run at the national championship, and I was praying the report cards wouldn't come before I left for the Citrus Bowl where we were playing Nebraska. And they did come, and all I wanted to do was get to that bowl game. And my dad said, who do you think is going to pay for grades like these? And I said, I will. And he said, okay, you will. And so I started working in restaurants to pay for school and just fell in love with it.
And it has to be a passion.
Yeah.
That's the when I go to restaurants, they certain ones stand out, and you go like, I wouldn't go to a Milos like I did in Vegas, but it was amazing. And I know it's in New York, and I haven't been to that one.
Is there one in Miami now?
Yeah. And it's like, God, these people are really good at what they do.
Yeah.
The preparation, the presentation,
yes.
But more than anything else, because I've been to too many in LA where presentation's more important than delivering the goods.
Right.
And their food was exceptional.
I think that's kind of a metaphor for LA, isn't it? And not just food, the presentation.
Well, I got such a kick out of places where they give you this massive plate, and then there would be 3 ounces or 4 ounces of food.
Right.
And it was like, I think something's missing here.
Yes.
Really, should I wake these people?
Yeah.
So, no, I do appreciate what you guys do.
Yes.
I do.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well,
because we're all on the road a lot, and we don't tend to cook a lot.
How has the restaurant world around the country and Canada as well changed over the years? And I'll back up and say, for me, you can't go to a city now and not find a good restaurant.
Right.
When in the old days, that wasn't necessarily the case.
Yeah. Well, I think we all are living a cleaner lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, where we would all eat a lot of fried food in the past. I think now we're looking at different options. And as I brought up the Mediterranean earlier, we're looking at different places than we would have 20 years ago. So, I mean, it's kind of funny. My kids grew up going to the Palm in West Hollywood, one of the originals. There was New York, Palm 1, Palm 2, and then L.A. And the guy who was part owner and ran L.A. was great to me. So I always had a table. And that was, it was, the seafood was amazing, obviously, because the lobster started at 3 pounds, the salmon, the swordfish, the scallops. But it was overconsumption. And now I think we're all a little bit better about the way we look at things, especially when it comes to dining. So, but we're spoiled because we live in a city with so many different options.
Yes, amazing.
Really spoiled.
And it's funny when friends come in from out of town, they're like, what's your favorite restaurant? I said, well, what do you, you can't say that.
What are you looking for?
Yeah, what are you looking for? You po' boy. All right, now shrimp po' boys, or are you looking for roast beef po' boys?
Yeah.
And it's fun to see a city that's that energized and cares that much about eating that I would hate to be a refrigerator salesman in this town, because I'm not sure, other than to keep your wine and beer cold, that too many people do a lot of cooking at home.
We're very blessed with not just the fishermen and also just the produce. And now you see having all these restaurants is creating more farmers, you know, more bakers. You see a lot more of that now because, you know, 20 years ago, people were not dining out this much.
Right.
It was somebody's birthday or an anniversary, but now people like, why cook? I can go to my favorite restaurant 3 times a week, or I can try Ethiopian food today, or try Mediterranean, or whatever you'd like. It's at your fingertips, and I think we didn't have those options before, but now culturally we're seeing a lot more food that is very different to us.
The one thing I'd wish we had more of in this market, two things actually. And I was spoiled by being out west, and I wait for it when I'm out west, is I like Mexican.
Okay.
I like fresh Mexican.
Yeah.
Really fresh. And I also like Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so we're limited in that area.
Yeah.
Whereas when I go to San Francisco or I go to Los Angeles, or, when it comes to Chinese, I wait. I save myself.
Yeah.
And with Mexican, and I do like a couple of the places I found here, but there, it is so simple. I mean, some of the pico de gallo is like a bruschetta.
Right.
It is so perfect what they've done with the serranos and the jalapenos and the way they chopped it up. And it's like perfection. And it's like, we should be doing this in New Orleans.
Right. Yeah.
So that's, I miss that more than anything. I was I hope it does. I was in L.A. last week and I had to do a voiceover and I had a couple of hours free. So I took the Uber straight to a Mexican restaurant and it was amazing.
We have a place on Broad Street.
A truck.
We went during the pandemic and we were just really hungry. And I'm like, I'm starving, I need to eat something.
That meal in a car
we
brightened our whole
day. We devoured it and the next day I'm like, let's go back. So if Larry's in that area and he'll stop by and he'll drop it to me in a restaurant, like it's
I
gotta look
because I
go Broad Street to the fairgrounds.
Let's say worst case scenario, you wake up in morning of a game day and have a little tickle in your throat. What happens? Is there a team of doctors,
really
specialists that jump down and
really fortunate
fix you up for the game?
I'm knocking on all these wood tables because I gave up cigarettes right after my first son was born, and he's now 39. And so I gave up cigarettes, although after a great meal sometimes, once a year, I'll catch a buzz off it, you know.
Right.
It's like, man, am I a lightweight? I got a buzz off a cigarette. But I gave that up, and, you know, people say, what do you do? Well, I work out. I try to.
Mm-hmm.
And I, great wine and garlic. You know, some people don't think much of it. And then I got turned on to something else. It's Indian spices and goes back in time. I'm trying to think of the name of it. They come in orange jars and they're gummies. And they're health food, actually.
Sure they are.
No.
Sure
they
gummies are, Joel.
Well, no. And because if they weren't.
Well, yeah. That would
we always appreciate everything. Is it turmeric?
Turmeric.
Yeah, that's it. And so I'm kind of regimented, and then I work out. I go to our place on Clearview.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Our partner is Oshner. And that's, but knock on wood, I've really been lucky. I drink a lot of coffee, a lot of tea, but thank God for good red. Yeah. And plenty of garlic in your food. I think garlic is supposed to be good.
They say it's, yeah, garlic and turmeric is definitely the combination that works the best.
Okay, good, because my breath stinks.
But it sounds great.
It's good for radio.
It's good for TV, too. Joel Myers, we can't thank you enough for spending this time with us. It really is amazing just to hear that voice right across the table from us instead of coming out of the television.
Well, thank you both for having me, first of all, and thanks for all the great meals I've had here at Compare Le Pan.
Many more to come.
And at Bywater,
yes,
American Beast.
See you again soon.
And now I got to find the food truck on Broad.
That's true.
Mexican.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
And that's all, folks.
Make way for the Reaper, yeah. Make way for the Reaper. Yeah, Bill! Make way for the Reaper. Make way for the Reaper. Make way for the Reaper. Make way for the Reaper.
Back up. Everybody back up. Give us a rough. Give us a rough.